Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Can't believe we're already here. Week 5 used to be the quarter point of the season, but with 17 weeks, it's the quarter point no more. But we are close. One undefeated team left in the Arizona Cardinals. We do have more than a third of the league sitting at 3-1. And how about all these big names on the market and on the move? Patriots trade 31-year-old Stephon Gilmore to the Panthers for a 6th-round draft pick. Gilmore was on the PUP list with a torn quad, actually still there, wanted a new deal. It's New England, of course, so that wasn't going to happen. He's eligible to come off the PUP list after week 6. And keep in mind, this is the second trade the Panthers have made for a cornerback in as many weeks, trying to fortify the back end of that defense. They lost first-round pick J.C. Horn for the season. Gilmore, by the way, just 31 years old, and was the defensive player of the year in 2019. So this is a great pickup for the Carolina Panthers. And while New England parts ways with Gilmore, they bring back Jamie Collins. It's his third stint with the team. He was drafted originally back in 2013. Collins released by the Lions. So Collins back with New England. Gilmore is gone. And Dallas cutting linebacker Jalen Smith, a former Pro Bowler who was relegated to a backup role this season. He was just 2 years into a 5-year, $64 million deal. So the Cowboys still on the hook for some cash over the next 2 years. $35 million of that $64 was guaranteed. But this is where NFL deals are just different, right, than Major League Baseball deals or basketball deals or hockey deals where the full thing isn't guaranteed. They're going to get out of it just 2 years in. That's kind of crazy. But they like what they saw from Micah Parsons. He's been awesome. Leighton Vander Esch looks better this year. Keanu Neal going to be back and healthy. So Smith on the market as of this moment, which is Wednesday afternoon, or by the time you're listening, perhaps he could be signed by a new team. And how about this? Just 2 days after Bears head coach Matt Nagy said Andy Dalton was his guy if healthy, he names Justin Fields his starter today and says he's going to be the starting quarterback moving forward. So you get your wish, Bears fans. I really hope that this is everything you wanted it to be. Nagy not calling plays anymore. Those duties handed off to Bill Lazor last week. So I can't wait to see what you Chicago fans complain about this week, because you're playing the Raiders on the road and they are not the Lions. And this is not going to be easy for Fields or anyone on that offense, especially without David Montgomery now. So interesting times for Chicago fans. Couple of fantasy nuggets before we get going. The Dolphins put Will Fuller on IR with an injured hand. Keep this in mind about Fuller. He was suspended week 1. He missed week 2 for personal reasons. He hurt his hand against the Colts last week. So he heads to IR with 2 catches for 26 yards through 4 weeks of the season. He's going to miss at least the next 3 games. So that 1-year, $10 million prove-it deal he signed with Miami, not working out so well at this point. Also, if you have Logan Thomas on your fantasy roster, the Washington football team has placed him on injured reserve. Thomas out at least 4 weeks. Washington signs former Packers tight end Jay Sternberger to their active roster. MJD not going to be with us this week. I know it's very sad. He made the trip over to London on Tuesday. He's going to be there for the entire week, gallivanting around, having some fun, maybe doing a one-man show or two. He's there for the Jets-Falcons game that's going to be played in Tottenham this weekend. That's the first London game of the year. So MJD loves traveling, loves being on the road. He'll be there for a week, hopefully back with us next week. So in his stead, we will welcome Sean O'Hara, our good buddy from NFL Network, three-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ. And really, let's be honest, he is best known as Eli's former center. This is a man that once cut a hole in the crotch of his shorts and free-balled before a Giants walkthrough, taking Eli just a little bit by surprise. So yes, he does have a good sense of humor, and he's a damn good analyst and a good buddy. We're going to be talking about Urban Meyer. I want to get his perspective on that situation. What would he be doing and thinking if he were in that locker room? His opinion on Vic Fangio's irrational call out of John Harbaugh. God, take a chill pill, Vic. Talking about the Cardinals, they're the last man standing, the last perfect team in the NFL. Are they for real? And of course, we're going to be talking about the Cowboys, who I think look really, really good, and the rest of the NFC East. Get Sean's take on my Washington football team, his New York football Giants, and a whole lot more. Today's HeliPod is brought to you by Vuori, performance apparel that works for you while you are working out and it looks good. What does Dion say? You look good, feel good, feel good, play good. Well, that's Vuori. They have been with me since I launched the HeliPad. I love their stuff. If you listen before, you know that. Great gear. My favorite, I think, thing that they make is the Core Short. It's a great workout short with a built-in liner. Everybody else is trying to copy this right now, but nobody's is as good as Vuori. They also have great joggers for the dudes or for the ladies, hoodies, performance tees, all kinds of stuff too, getting you ready for the fall and the winter as it starts to get a little bit chillier outside. Check out Vuori, that's V-U-O-R-I, clothing.com/helipod for 20% off your first order today. That's V-U-O-R-I, clothing.com/helipod, H-E-L-L-I-E-P-O-D, 20% off your first order today. I promise you, you will not regret it. With no further ado, let's get the HeliPod without MJD started right now. As promised, my good buddy Sean O'Hara on the HeliPod for a second time. We already went down, you know, memory lane, story time, Rutgers, undrafted free agent, multiple time Pro Bowl or Super Bowl champ. So let's just talk football now, O'Hara.
All right, let's do it. So this is the second time on the show. So, you know, this is when you're supposed to drop your movie line. Utah, give me two.
Yeah, that's the surfing movie, right?
The surfing movie. Oh, my.
Point Break. Goodness. It's Point Break.
Yeah, it's not just a surfing movie. It is like the all-time.
I know. Okay. Listen,
we've talked about this before. Agent.
We've talked about this before. Sean O'Hara loves to drop movie lines. He dropped a couple from Brokeback Mountain on me. I just kind of went right over my head, and I was kicking myself afterwards for not recognizing exactly what it was. And he got as did everybody else on that show, a huge laugh out of it. So
yeah, over your head, over your shoulder, you know, whatever. It's Brokeback. Yeah, you can't. I can't quit you.
Looking back, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. All right. Speaking of can't quit you, and maybe quitting eventually. Urban Meyer has been trending now for 3 or 4 days. Michael Silver had a tweet thread on Tuesday as we taped this, basically saying the situation has reached a crisis point. A player on the team said he had zero credibility. Player didn't like that he canceled the team meeting to deal with all the backlash from this. Bottom line, it's bad. And the player said, I don't know how he is going to function. So let's rewind. Let's put Sean O'Hara on the Jacksonville Jaguars roster. Urban Meyer comes in to meet individually with the position groups as opposed to having the big team meeting. That's what the player was talking about that was canceled. How are you reacting to this? And to you, is this overblown or is this just another in a long line of Urban Meyer mishaps?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I mean, if you would have told me that in week five of the NFL that the Jacksonville Jaguars were relevant, I would have never guessed it would have been for this exact reason. If you would have told me they were 0-4, I would absolutely believe that, no doubt about it. But this is really kind of, number one, it's an awkward situation, I think, for Urban personally. But when you look at it from a player standpoint, you know, if I'm on the Jaguars team and I'm in the locker room, look, coach, with all due respect, we've got bigger fish to fry than what you're doing on your off weekend. Look, we played Thursday night, you know, it was on Thursday night football, we lost. What he's doing on his night off or whatever, like that's on him. But the challenge that I think that every coach has, and as much as this game is about X's and O's, when you're a head coach, it's about leadership and it's about, can I get this group of 53 men on my roster to buy into what I'm selling them, to buy into what I'm teaching them, to buy into the concepts and the principles of team and how we are going to win football games? The biggest thing you have to have is you have to have credibility. You have to have this leadership quality that guys want to follow you and be around you. So from that standpoint, you know, I don't know what that locker room was like. I've played for a college coach before in the NFL in Butch Davis. And look, it took time. It took time for guys to kind of embrace him. You know, the first year, we just kind of felt like, man, this guy, he thinks we're the Cleveland Canes. You know, he's running this like we're in Miami. And this is not, you can't treat grown men the same way as young men. So from that standpoint, I'm sure that there's some players that their feathers are ruffled. I guarantee you this, Dan, there's some players that don't give a hoot. They're probably like, actually, coach, I kind of like you better now because now you're a little more human. You know, maybe you were putting yourself on this pedestal and that you were walking on water, you know, because of what you did at Ohio State. Now, maybe this brings you back down to our level. Maybe now you have to kind of humble yourself. You know what? Maybe this is a turning point in his coaching career where he says, you know what? That incident brought me closer to my team than ever before. And, you know, I think if you're Urban Meyer, that's what you hope comes out of this. But I'll say this. I'll share this quick story with you real quick. This would have never happened to Tom Coughlin, and for many reasons, but none other than this. Tom Coughlin was adamant about, we fly together as a team on the way to the game. We fly back. Jeff Fiegel's retired early, prematurely, because Tom Coughlin would not let him stay home. We've played in Arizona, and his family, his wife, his kids were in Arizona. He had a house in Arizona. They were living there during the season. Tom wouldn't let him stay there after we played Arizona, made him fly back with the team. And then he had to get on another flight and go back to go spend the off day with his family. That's how, you know, regimented he was about team first, team last, team always. And I'll be damned if Tom Coughlin didn't sit in coach in the middle of all the players on every flight to and from every game. He never sat
really?
In first. Yeah, we used to tease him all the time. Coach, what are you doing back here? He's like, I got to be with my men. This is where I belong, with my troop, all right, with my group. These are my boys. So he sat. Now, I will say this, a little pissed, he used to piss his tall guys off. He took the exit row seat. Like the last guy that needs extra leg room was TC, but here he was all sprawled out, you know, and we're jamming our kneecaps into the tray table in front of us. But he wanted to fly and coach to be with his boys because he wanted to be on the same level with us. So could have never in my wildest dreams imagined Coach Coughlin would say, hey, you know, you guys have a safe flight home. I'm going to stay here to spend some time with my family. Oh, no, no way in hell would Tom Coughlin have ever let that happen. And ironically, he used to run the Jacksonville Jaguars, which is now in this fiasco.
You know what's crazy? I'm so glad you brought that up because I was actually talking to a coaching buddy. And he said that's the main thing that stood out. He said very rarely are players allowed to stay behind. And never, never has he heard of a head coach not flying back with the team.
Yeah, and except for some medical reason. I've never heard of it.
That's crazy. Well, let me look back. I'm curious what that must have been like. First of all, listen,
it's his first year coaching in the NFL. Obviously, he has a lot of experience on the college level, but you're walking into a room not with guys that you've handed a scholarship and sat in their living room talking to their parents, with grown-ass men who have probably all been through their own marital issues or what have you. Can you imagine you're with Soybert and Snee and coach walks in? Is that like slow golf clap? Oh, here we go. I mean, you almost just have to embrace it, right? Like, just, I'm an idiot. Don't be like me, right? Like, how else do you handle it?
Yeah, no, I would like to think that we would definitely bust the coach's balls, you know, which is probably appropriate given the circumstance. You know, I might even try to figure out what song was playing on the radio when that was going on. Was it R. Kelly's Bump and Grind? Like, what was exactly playing on the jukebox, and then try to recreate that. I think that, you know, to humanize that whole thing, you know, would be the best way to kind of move past it. You know, I think here's the big thing is, all right, is this a fireable offense? Absolutely not. Like, was it poor judgment? Yes. Him not flying home with the team, to me, that was a poor judgment, poor leadership, should have never happened. And let's be honest, he was flying back to Jacksonville, and where they played, Cincinnati. So they were in Ohio. It's not like he was in Seattle and it was like, hey, I don't want to fly away back. I'm going to stay with my family. Like, dude, you don't think that Urban Meyer has a private jet? You don't think he has hours as part of his contract? So it would have been nothing for him to go home. And then, you know what? Hey, if I got 2 days, I'm going to go visit family, go do all that. So definitely poor judgment on that standpoint. You know, hopefully they can laugh about it, but the reality is, they're 0-4. That's the biggest aspect of all this is they have yet to win a football game, and they're still the laughing stock of the NFL right now. And that's what he was brought in to change, and it hasn't happened.
Did you see this meme yet?
Oh yeah, Urban Cowboy. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Except I think she was facing the other way.
I think you're right. Yeah. And oh, by the way, and we'll move on past this. We spent way too much time on the Jacksonville Jaguars, especially for an episode in which one of the great Jags of all time, MJD, is not even here because he's in London. But they've had a lot of closed door meetings this week talking about all this crap, and they've spent no time getting ready for the Titans, I'm sure, or not as much time as they normally would have. I don't want to say no time, right? So, like, that's the big thing right now with the Jags. All right, moving on. We love controversy on the helipod, no matter how petty it is sometimes. Tell me what you think of this one. Ravens 3 yards short of tying a 44-year-old NFL record for consecutive 100-yard games on the ground. Instead of taking a knee against the Broncos to end the game, Lamar Jackson runs, picks up 5 yards, and then he goes down, enabling the Ravens to tie the record. Vic Fangio, head coach for the Broncos, thought it was Bush League. He said the Ravens don't care about player safety. And he also said he expected it from them. I thought that was a little strong, just a little strong. As an opposing player, would you have cared as much as Vic Fangio cares?
No, I think he was totally out of line going that route. Number one, it was one play. They ran to the sideline, and Lamar Jackson actually went down before he went out. So it was not like they were trying to run up the score. It was like, hey, look, somebody obviously came over to him and said, listen, just so you know, we're like 4 yards away from this record. Like, oh, it's, you know what? It's like, I'm glad you told me that, because we were going to just take a knee, which means we would have lost a yard. Let me just tell you this from an offensive lineman. There is nothing that pisses me off more than the kneel down at the end of the game, counting for negative rushing yards. Agreed. Because I've been on a game where we had 102 yards rushing. We took 3 kneel downs and we ended up at 98 or 99 yards because of those negative runs. And it whacks you out of that. I mean, like, that's, statistic, having over 100 yards rushing is a big thing, and it's a big thing for everybody. It's not, forget about just John Harbaugh. I mean, that's something you take pride in as an offensive line, as an offensive coordinator. Lamar Jackson's taking pride in it, the running backs. I mean, you're talking about a lot of people that have contributed to that record. So I have zero issue with it. And you know what? Vic Fangio should have more of an issue about the fact that they lost the football game and his quarterback threw an interception in the red zone that led to them even getting the ball back. So I think Vic is going to look back on this and say, you know what, I probably should have left that one alone. It was not like they tried to run the score up. And if Lamar Jackson had rattled off a 95-yard run and, you know, or threw a deep ball to Marquise Brown, I think now we're talking about a different scenario.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think once he has some time to reflect on it, he'll probably give old Coach Harbaugh call. It makes you wonder though, if at some point Harbaugh like pissed in his Cheerios or something, because he really came after him. But I think they'll sort that all out. Last season after week four, okay, we had 6 undefeated teams. Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City, and the Bills were all 4-0. The Titans and Steelers had to postpone their game, so they were 3-0. All of those teams went on to win their division, although Tampa Bay, of course, won the Super Bowl. They were 3-1 at the time. This year, we have one unbeaten team left going into week five. That's Arizona, that huge statement win over the Rams, a team that just took down the defending Super Bowl champs, and they beat them. Arizona beat the Rams by 17 points here in L.A. at SoFi Stadium on the road. Huge win. When you look at Arizona right now, what do you see?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I see an offense that's just, you know, explosive on all fronts. You know, I felt like last year and even the year before, Arizona's offense was, you know, they were an aerial assault. But when it came time to run the football, it was obvious that that was not something that they spent a lot of time working on. And there were some struggles there. So I look at them right now. All of a sudden, Chase Edmonds is toting the rock. You know, he's pounding it. They get down in the red zone. James Conner is punishing guys on his way into the end zone. So while defenses would say, all right, look, they're trying to spread us out. We know they're trying to throw the football. Let's get after Kyler Murray. Now, I feel like they have a little more balance. They're a little bit more physical up front. I think Rodney Hudson has been a big part of that. You know, signing him from the Raiders has been huge. You know, Kyler Murray was on a roll last year until he got hurt. He hurt his shoulder. He got hit a couple times. And he wasn't the same cat after that. But I think adding A.J. Green is paying off in big-time dividends. Having him and DeAndre Hopkins, that's a tough – defensively, what do you do? You know, if you double DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green is going to kill you one-on-one, which we saw that happen. And then defensively, when you just look at, you know, they beat the Rams, it was turnovers. They got the interception by Stafford. They caused the, you know, Sony Michel to fumble the ball. Marcus Golden punched the ball out. And, you know, look, they're doing all this. And JJ Watt hasn't even really exploded onto the scene yet. I think he's just waiting, and you know, with JJ Watt, it's going to come in bunches. So I think they're legit. You know, it's interesting to compare like where we were last year, because I feel like last year was such a throwaway year with the pandemic. But all four teams that started out 4-0 last year, ironically, veteran teams, they had been running that offense for years, and they all had, you know, solid quarterbacks, and that's part of the reason why they started out so well last year. This year, a little bit different.
No, that's a great point. Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City, and the Bills, those teams that started 4-0 last year again. And you brought up Rodney Hudson. I mean, you could make the argument. Obviously, Kyler Murray's been spectacular. And last year, until he hurt his shoulder, to your point, he was a legitimate MVP candidate, if you remember. And it's the same situation this year. He's actually the betting favorite in Vegas now to win the MVP. But you could make a case for Hudson being the MVP of this offense. The coaching staff has absolutely raved about him in terms of being a great communicator. He had a couple of backup guards come in a couple of weeks ago. They didn't miss a beat. You know, he was kind of holding their hand, guiding them along. Aaron Donald was invisible in that game. He had 4, I think, assisted tackles. And this is a team that he's owned, right? He has 15% of his career sacks coming against the Cardinals, and he was really neutralized due in part to Rodney Hudson. It makes you wonder why the Raiders, I know it was a money issue, right? But why they can't figure out a way to hold on to one of the top 2 or 3 centers in football, if not the best center?
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. And I mean, they had paid him a lot of money, you know, with that contract that they signed him with to begin with. But when you think about all the other guys they lost, you would think they would say, hey, look, if we're going to pay one guy, let's keep everything in the middle solid. And his relationship with Derek Carr, that's a no-brainer. Believe me, you know, I know you saw in weeks 1 and 2, we saw a couple of shotgun snaps go sideways on Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. And that's a rookie center in there. And it's like, guess what? That doesn't happen if Rodney's in there. So, you know, there's definitely caveats from both of those. But when you look at the quarterback center relationship, no doubt Kyler feels much more protected, not just physically, but mentally. He knows, all right, look, Rodney and I are on the same page. He's going to see things the way I see it. He understands blitzes and coverages. and he could direct traffic and help me out with that. So I could focus on what's going on outside the numbers and relaying things to my wide receivers. You know, I think that's a big part of it. And I think he's really helped out in the run game.
Let me ask you this about the, you're talking about the Raiders center. When he does his shotgun snap, I was noticing this on Monday night.
Turns it sideways, right?
Yeah. And he just kind of flips it back as opposed to the traditional spin it back is almost like an underhand throw. How did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the key with shotgun snaps is a lot of people think that you're supposed to, like, you know, flick the wrist. And like when I would do shotgun snaps, I tried to keep the wrist, you know, keep it stiff. Don't break the wrist when you throw it, because that's when you get in trouble. And that's when the ball kind of sails on you and gets a little hot. So you just kind of want to treat it like a shot put almost through the legs. But it's an art form. And I tell you, for guys that have not done it before, it can become a little bit of a mind block, and you're constantly thinking about it. And sometimes guys get so focused on the snap, they forget, oh yeah, I got a block too. And then, you know, inevitably on third down, you'll see the nose guard will all of a sudden tilt and slide over to the center snap hand. So if you get a center that's airmailed a couple of shotgun snaps on third and long, they're going to be pressuring that shoulder, which usually centers will kind of short arm it.
Right.
Because they're trying to get hands up quick. And then that's when the ball sprays. So it's definitely a factor for newer centers and younger centers.
Yeah, that's something we don't really think about a whole lot. A lot of center talk on the helipod this week with the former center. I like this stuff. You don't get this anywhere else. You don't get this on Total Access. Yeah, all this
we call this center quarterback exchange. You know, you're not scared to put your hand in between a man's legs, are you, Dan?
No, especially if it's you, buddy. I mean, I dream about that on a regular basis.
Yeah, you probably go shotgun though.
Slightly more comfortable. Yeah. Because I'm knowing you'd cut a hole in your pants like you did for Eli back in the day.
Alleged.
Well, let's stick in the NFC East now, since we're talking about Eli and old Giant stories. Cowboys 3-1. They're one of 12 3-1 teams left, and they look legit, man. They've beaten the Panthers and the Chargers. Their only loss is in the opener to the Bucks by 2. They look balanced offensively, defensively. They've improved. They traded down to grab Micah Parsons. He's been fantastic. Trevon Diggs, they got in the second round. And I don't think you can discount the fact that they are in the NFC East, which is, once again, it's not as bad as last year, obviously, but it's not a good division. And after we were ready to bury Zeke, you know, in week one, suddenly they have one of the best rushing attacks in the NFL again. Tony Pollard and Zeke both on track for 1,000-yard seasons. That hasn't happened. You know, it's only happened 7 times in NFL history. Two guys from one team, and twice those have been quarterbacks and running backs. So it's only happened 5 times with 2 running backs.
Yeah. We were a part of it with the Giants, with Derek Ward and Brandon Jacobs. And then I think Carolina did it the year right after us. So it was kind of weird. It happened, you know, 2 years in a row. You know, it's remarkable for a number of different reasons to be able to do that. And, you know, obviously they've got a better shot at doing it this year because there's 17 games.
Sure.
So, you know, there'll be a little bit of an asterisk there, but like number one, to run the football that many times, you have to be winning a lot of games, because a lot of times, you know, look, if you're playing from behind, all of a sudden the game plan goes out the window. So there's that aspect of it. And then you also have to have 2 running backs stay healthy for the whole season. And look, through 4 weeks of the season, you could probably count on one hand how many teams have their starting running back room. You know, the running backs they started the season with are all still there. I mean, guys are dropping like flies. We just lost another couple of guys. I mean, Montgomery for the Bears is out. You know, the Rams lost 2 before the season even started. So that's tough in itself. But getting back to the Cowboys discussion, look, I've always felt like in the NFL, it's not always who you play, but sometimes when you play them. I think if they played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week 4, as opposed to week 1 opening night, I think they beat them. I think they win. We just saw the Bucs kind of flop around a little bit against New England. And if it hadn't been for a doinked field goal, they would have been taking the L back to Tampa Bay with them. And that was against Mac Jones. So we saw them go toe to toe with the defending Super Bowl champions on opening night. And, you know, I think they're even better 3 weeks later than they were in week 1. the biggest difference, look, we know what Dak can do. Last year, he was going to break every record that the Cowboys had for as far as passing yards and quarterback stats, and then he got hurt. But it was their defense. Their defense has been holding them back. And now when you look at their defense, I mean, they're getting after the quarterback. They're stopping the run. They're creating turnovers. It's amazing what Dan Quinn has done in such a short amount of time for that defense. And that's really what's going to put them atop of the NFC East.
So let's take a look at some of these other teams. I think it's obvious that the Cowboys are the cream of the NFC's crop. My Washington football team coming in at 2-2 into week five, and the defense, which was supposed to be potentially the best defense in the NFL, has just been brutal. They're allowing 30 points per game. They're 29th in yards allowed. You know, the Eagles 1-3 after losing to KC, but the offense can put up points. They put up 450 yards on the Chiefs. Penalties killed the Eagles. They had three touchdowns taken off the board. And then your Giants coming off an impressive road win over the Saints. Saquon's looking a lot better. Daniel Jones, career high, 402 yards passing. He engineered that comeback win. And I think the last three games for Jones, he's looked really good. I was looking through Pro Football Focus the other day, and Jones has the second best quarterback rating in the NFL right now in terms of the PFF grade. I'm not talking about passer rating or QBR on ESPN.com, but the PFF grade, which I think actually probably means a little more. Let's dig into your Giants just a little bit here. Do you see that improvement from them, and do you feel like they're going to be able to do enough to compete a little bit in the East?
Yeah, the improvement offensively, really, it's been monumental within just this last game compared to the third game. The Giants really, I mean, they very well should be 2-2. They very well could be 3-1 right now. And I think this is a totally different conversation if, you know, they don't lose the field goal on Thursday night down in Washington, you know, as time expired, because Dexter Lawrence jumped, or did he jump? I don't know. They're still trying to figure that out. But, you know, so they lose that game because of a bad penalty right at the end. And then they lose the Atlanta game with time running out. So this could have been the Dallas Cowboys at 3-1 against the Giants at 3-1. So, you know, what's changed? Why are the Giants able to go down in New Orleans and beat the Saints for the first time since 1993 in New Orleans? I think they just didn't beat themselves. Like, the Giants have been, and this has not just been for this season, this has been for a couple years running now, they have played some of the ugliest and sloppiest football that you will see. And turning on the film week in and week out, it's been so frustrating to see the mental gaffes, the brain farts, the guys just getting beat left and right, not knowing who to block. That has been really frustrating. And then the Saints game, it all just kind of came together. And I think one of the guys that deserves a lot of credit is Matt Skura, who started at left guard for them. Think about this. The Giants have started a different left guard in every single game this year. Two of them have gone on IR now. Nick Gates, their center, who moved us to left guard, you know, broke his leg. He's on IR. Shane Lemieux, who started the season at left guard, he's on IR with a torn patella. So they've had a little bit of bad luck there. But Matt Skura had never started a game at left guard in his career. So he started 50-some games at center for Baltimore and then in a couple at right guard. But he actually played really well. He held up really well. Andrew Thomas is playing his you-know-what off. And I think right now Andrew Thomas is playing some of the best football in all of the NFL at left tackle. He looked great. His pass sets are looking really natural. And I think he's starting to stack together some really good games. So that's been a big part of the whole offense working. Saquon Barkley, like, I thought the first couple weeks he missed a couple holes, missed some cuts, took kind of some sideline, easy way outs. Didn't look like Saquon Barkley to me. This past game, all of a sudden now, all right, he's getting in. The game's kind of going back to slow down mode for him, and I think he's starting to get a little more comfortable. The first 2 weeks, he sounded like Cole Trickle just trying to get out of the car. But I think for the Giants right now, it's they have zero pass rush. And the fact that they can't, on third down, they can't get pressure without blitzing somebody, that puts them at a disadvantage. And that's something that they've got to find a way to correct, whether it's Leonard Williams. Azeez Ojulari has shown flashes of some ability. But that's really where the Giants, they need to take some of the pressure off their secondary. And, of course, this is a big week for them taking on the Cowboys. And good luck getting to the quarterback, because the Cowboys, their offensive line has been playing pretty well.
Yeah, the Giants going to be 7-point dogs going into Dallas on Sunday. Sean, I'm going to take a quick break and then back to chat about a couple of games that we have coming up this weekend that we're keeping an eye on.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Friends, I want to tell you about Vaco. I know you're ready for an all-new career adventure, and Vaco has what you are looking for. Vaco is how organizations get the kind of talent solutions they really need, whether it's bringing in a team to solve a specific business issue or finding the next team member. Only Vaco brings a head start, a new perspective, and a real commitment, and now they're looking for you to join their team. If you are either an experienced accounting and finance pro or a skilled techie in search of a new career opportunity, Vaco wants to hear from you. With a national and global presence and a culture built on freedom and autonomy, it's no surprise that Vaco has been named one of Inc. magazine's fastest growing private companies 15 years in a row. What are you waiting for, folks? Professional adventure awaits you. Apply today at vaco.com/helipod. That's vaco.com/helipod, all lowercase, for all the information that you need. Also want to tell you about our good friends at Greens Plus, a leader since 1989, known for creating the first ever blended green superfood powder and the first company to infuse green superfoods into a bar. Greens Plus bars and powders taste great, and they're the most effective way to improve your immunity, detox your body, boost your energy, and get that nutritional insurance that your body deserves from organic, gluten-free, premium green superfoods available at Whole Foods, Amazon, or Greens Plus with free shipping. I love the natural energy bars, the wild berry superfood powder, and my teenage son is living on that vanilla protein powder right now. You can try it today, and I'm giving you 20% off with the promo code HELLI. That's H-E-L-L-I-E, 20% off Greens Plus today. All right, we're back. O'Hara, I got a couple of games. We're not going to pick them like we make MJD do every week, but we do have some big games this weekend. I just kind of want to look at.
Get your take on.
What?
Who's winning in your pick contest between you and MJD?
He was up by a game going into last week.
Okay. All right. So it's pretty even, I see.
It's pretty even. Yeah. We were even after the first week, and then I think I was a little bit ahead week two. He's pretty good. Like, there's only a handful, you know, he's not going to pick the Jags every week because that's not going to help him, you know, even though he's a former Jag. It would be like you picking the Giants every week. But he does pick the Rams every week. And as you know, when they're paying you, you're picking them, right? Like, that's just generally how it works.
Yeah. Well, and they look pretty good, so it makes it easy.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. Speaking of the Rams, at Seattle, that's the Thursday night game. Tough turnaround for the Rams coming off that Sunday performance against the Cardinals. But as a player, when you're coming off a stinker, wouldn't you rather have a short week?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of erase it from your mindset, get that bad taste out of your mouth. It's something interesting, too, the NFL has been doing a lot more of, is making these Thursday night matchups divisional games. And here's why that's good for these teams is you know those guys. So, like, Sean McVay knows Seattle. Seattle knows the Rams. So it's a little bit easier from a coach's standpoint. Hey, look, we have game plans from previous years. We know the schemes that they're running. We know – you know, how to prepare for them. So it's kind of made it easier from that standpoint. But I think this matchup right now, if you're Seattle and if you are Pete Carroll right now, I think you've got to be worried about your defense because you just played the 49ers. And I thought the 49ers offensively exposed a couple of different issues that are going on right now in Seattle. Number one, Sidney Rice, their corner, looks lost. And I think when you look at some of the big plays that Deebo Samuel had, even George Kittle, he's running down the middle of their defense wide open. That never used to happen in Seattle. I mean, they would never make mistakes that would allow for big plays. But yet here we are, and I'm just watching the film this morning and yesterday of what Kyle Shanahan schemed up against the cover three zone defenses. You know, you kind of you run like a scissors route and you kind of flood one side of the field. They ran that a couple of times and Seattle had no clue. They didn't know how to stop it. So I think when you look at Sean McVay, even on a short week, he's got to be licking his chops because now he's got the gunslinger in Stafford and he's got DeSean Jackson. He's got Woods. He's got Van Jefferson and Cooper Kupp. I mean, he's got the horses now to really make life tough for Seattle in that secondary. I wouldn't be shocked if Stafford goes for 400 plus in this game, just given all of the issues that Seattle's having right now. Like Jamal Adams on that 76 yard touchdown at Deebo Samuel, Jamal Adams comes buzzing down and lets Deebo run right by him, thinking the corner's going to pick him up. And you know, I mean, look, Deebo was all by himself. So there's definitely some wrinkles there that Sean McVay is going to look to attack.
Yeah, definitely not the Legion of Boom in Seattle these days. Cleveland taking on the Chargers. That's a in the afternoon window. That's going to be a good one. You got Stefanski, the offensive mind against the defensive mind of Brandon Staley, two guys that are under 40, kind of up-and-coming head coaches in the game. Baker taking on Justin Herbert, Myles Garrett and Joey Bosa, Odell and Keenan. I mean, these are two playoff teams right here. And for me, you look at the Browns last week, not a great game from Baker. They still figured it out, right? This Browns team is a really good football team. And I think what we're seeing now, too, is that so are the Chargers, right? They lost all those close games last year. They're relatively healthy now. And, you know, Herbert is quickly ascending to, in my mind, a top five quarterback in the NFL. What do you see in this one?
Yeah, well, look, if this game comes down to, you know, which quarterback, you know, has to win it with his arm, I'll put money on Herbert all day long because Justin looks phenomenal. And he looks like the game is slowing down a little bit. That red zone touchdown he threw to his tight end in the back of the end zone, I mean, that was phenomenal. He could tell
he's getting off.
He kind of looked to the left a little bit, didn't like what he saw. The defense kind of shifted over, created a throwing window. I mean, that timing and that precision is pretty special for him. At this stage of his career, being so young. Two totally different offenses, though, right, Hilly? I mean, you've got the Browns, who they want to run the ball. They want Nick Chubb. You know, they want to get, you know, the Kareem Hunt going and then build some play action off of that. Whereas Joe Lombardi, you know, he's got a little different mindset. He wants to air it out a little bit more, use the running backs a little more in space. So two different styles there. I tell you, the matchup that I can't wait to see in this is Myles Garrett versus Rashawn Slater. Rashawn Slater, the rookie left tackle that the Chargers drafted out of Northwestern. This kid's, he's a stud. And I remember watching film of him coming out of college. I'm like, man, he's got some of the best hands that I've ever seen coming out of college. Like great punch, always on target with his hands, really good footwork, and it's transferred. It's really showed up. So him against Myles Garrett, and Myles Garrett, I tell you, he ate Jason Peters lunch a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you saw what he did to Rashad Hill, the left tackle for the Minnesota Vikings, mm-hmm. but he damn near put him in a body bag. He literally just put both hands in front of his chest. He dumped him on. I thought they were going to bring out the defibrillator for Rashad Hill because I thought he was done. I thought he was DOA. It's remarkable how quick Myles Garrett gets off the football for how big he is. Word on the street is the P guy was waiting for him in his locker after the game. Because he was dominating people so bad, they made him pee in the cup right after the game. They're like, all right, yeah, we're going to need a sample here, buddy. You're looking like Superman out there. So that'll be a fun one for me to watch.
All right, we got two more. Chicago at Las Vegas, you know, Raiders trying to rebound after that Monday night performance, looking more maybe like what we expected. They've always kind of been a roller coaster. They played so great in one those two, you know, overtime games in the first 3 weeks of the season. But the story here to me is what everybody's been talking about incessantly, you know, the entire offseason. Matt Nagy says if Andy Dalton's healthy, he's going to be our guy. Fields looked better last week. Nagy hands the play calling duties over to Bill Lazor, but they were also playing the Lions, right? So everything's going to look better, I think, when you're playing the Lions. What's your take on Chicago at Las Vegas Sunday?
Yeah, touching on the offense, first of all, I thought that Bill Lazor did a great job of sticking to the run. You know, I mean, when you look at what David Montgomery did before he got hurt, I think he was averaging 4.6 yards a carry. He had, you know, 100 some yards. He would have had probably 150 if he didn't get hurt, but they did a great job of establishing the run, and I liked the concepts that they were using in the run game. So that definitely helped out with Justin Fields. There are times when Justin Fields makes an unbelievable throw. I mean, he made a couple of throws to Darnell Mooney that you just say, wow, that was pretty special. And then there's a couple of plays where you're like, okay, what in the heck was that? He looked like a deer in headlights. Like there was a blitzer coming off the edge and he never even saw him. But yet he turns in a Neo from the Matrix and he makes the guy miss and runs for 15 yards. So you're on the sidelines, the coach saying, no, what are you doing? What are you doing? Great play. Yeah, that was awesome. I think that's probably what's driving Nagy nuts is like, look, if you're Matt Nagy right now, like you're like the president of the United States, right? 49% of the people don't like what you're about to do. You got a 51% likable rating. The problem that he has right now is he can't sit here and suffer through a bunch of losses because you have a young quarterback that's making rookie mistakes because his job's on the line. So he needs to win games. You know, it can't be look what happened to Doug Peterson, right? So you're looking at it like, all right, fine, we're going to play Justin Fields. And you know what? I know that we may lose the next six games because he's still trying to get his bearings and figure things out. I don't know if I can withstand that as a coach unless I get the approval from the owners and from the team. So he's bad on that from that standpoint. But no doubt this offense is completely different with Justin Fields in at quarterback. He gives you that element. He gives you that ability to run and scramble when things break down. Is he seeing things as well as Andy Dalton would right now? No. But the question is, Andy Dalton was never really that mobile to begin with. And now if he's got a gimpy knee, forget about it. He might as well put, Nick Foles back there. I think the interesting thing aside from the offense of what's going on at quarterback for this game is like, can we talk about the return of the Mac? Khalil Mack going back.
That's right.
He's going to get to sack Derek Carr. And then of course he's going to be looking over at Mike Mayock and John Gruden and, hey boys, pass rushers are hard to find, huh?
That was the first big move, right? When Gruden got that job was to ship Khalil Mack out for a couple of first rounders.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you can really say who's won that trade, but you know that he's going to be motivated going into Las Vegas. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Well, the biggest game of the weekend, Buffalo, Kansas City, it's the Sunday nighter. Kansas City's favored by 2.5 at home. Last year, KC won by 14-9. This year it's different in my mind because this Kansas City defense looks like it could be an issue. Like Patrick Mahomes and that offense, they're not just going to outscore everybody and make you not think about the defense every single week. They're going to do it most weeks, but not every week. And at some point, the defense has to be able to hold their water. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think, when you kind of look at the way they started the season, that's been a little bit of an issue. But I'll say this. What'd you say the line was, 2 points or 2.5?
2.5.
Yeah, 2.5. That's a weird line because, usually if you're the home team, if everything is equal, the home team is +3, right?
Right.
Like, so.
Or they're favored by -3. -3.
Right. So you can tell I don't bet a lot. but for them to be 2.5, they're -2.5.
Yeah. So on a neutral field, basically they're saying that Buffalo would be half a point better.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a far cry from like what we saw last year when these two teams went head to head twice. So that's an interesting line. And I think when you look at offensively, I mean, they just activated Josh Gordon, like as if this offense for the Chiefs needed more speed at the wide receiver position. They had, Flash Gordon or Hash Gordon, depending on on the week. I think that this offense, look, I know everybody wants to focus on the Chiefs defense and, but like, look, there's nobody better than Patrick Mahomes right now. And the way he's dealing, he threw for 5 touchdowns, this past Sunday. And we're just kind of like, it's Mahomes. I mean, any other quarterback throws for 5 touchdowns, they're player of the week. Like, everybody's, got them on their shoulders. I think the challenge for Buffalo is just that what we're talking about with Kansas City, it's really Buffalo's defense that I'm more concerned about because that's the reason why they lost twice last year. They couldn't get Mahomes off the field. They couldn't get pressure on him. And the one way that you beat Patrick Mahomes is just what we saw Tampa Bay do in the Super Bowl is get after his ass. And look, Patrick Mahomes can't complete all these nice passes if he's running for his life. So what have the Bills done? Their first and second round pick in last year's draft were two pass rushers, right? Boogie Bushum and Greg Rousseau. So they basically said, look, we need to beat the Kansas City Chiefs and slow down Mahomes. How do we do that? Well, let's draft some more pass rushers. So when you look at the amount of talent that Buffalo has invested in their front, Ed Oliver was a first-round pick. Starlo Tulele was a first-round pick down in Carolina. You know, I mentioned Boogie Basham. When you look at everybody that they have up front, A.J. Epinesa, I think he was a second-round pick as well. They've got a lot of stock and a lot of equity in that front. Those guys need to show up.
Yeah, that's going to be a that's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, and Mahomes too. I feel like he's gotten more patient. He's the best quarterback in the game, right? But when you take away those deep shots and don't allow that at all, I just wonder if he just says, you know what, I'm going to take it. Because so often when he throws these no-look passes or these 50-yard bombs, it works out. So is that not the way to kind of beat that team, is just to say there's no way we're letting him get behind us? Or is that impossible with a guy like Tyreek Hill?
I think that's kind of like what everybody talks about during the week. They're like, all right, look, we're not going to give up the big play, right? We're going to play two high safeties. And all of a sudden, Clyde Edwards-Helaire's got 100 yards rushing in the first half. And you're like, all right, now, you know what? Like, we got to figure something out. But even with a two high safety, Tyreek Hill is still running by people. And it's like, hey, that looked great on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday when we were running against the scout team. And it's like, all right, every week you play the team that's playing the Chiefs. On Tuesday, the coaching staff is saying, all right, who's going to beat Tyreek Hill on our scout team? Well, who's the fastest guy on our team? All right, well, we got this guy Featherstone over here who ran a 4.240 at one point in time in college. He can't catch the ball, but sure, let's let him go out there and run. And you say, all right, we did a good job corralling that guy. Well, then you get to the game, and this guy is 10 times faster than the guy you just had playing scout team. So everything looks different on Sundays, and I think that's what defenses are looking at when they see Tyreek Hill.
You're 100% right. I called the Air Force game this past week, and when you're talking to, they played New Mexico, and we were talking to the New Mexico coaches. Rocky Long is the defensive coordinator there. He was an old New Mexico head coach.
Great name for a defensive coordinator.
Oh, so good. And he's one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. And he said, you know, and he's old school too. And he said, to be honest, I said, how do you prepare for a triple option? He said, to be honest with you, you just can't. And we'd be better off actually not practicing against it because we don't have the personnel to duplicate the triple option. So when we practice against our guys who run it and it looks nothing like they're going to see on Saturday when they're out there on the field, he goes, we probably shouldn't practice against it at all. But that's the thing. You can't duplicate Tyreek Hill's speed, right? It's an impossibility. Sean O'Hara, one of the best in the business. Miss you, buddy. I really appreciate the time. As per usual, it was about double what I promised you. So I will, the Vuori gift box will be really, really good this time. It'll actually arrive. I know you don't believe it, but I'm going to make this happen.
All right. Yeah, Christmas is in December. Well, you're on the clock. We'll see.
All right. Have a good Total Access tonight, buddy. I'll be watching.
All right. Thanks, Ellie. Good to see you, brother.
See you, man.